when Vampire Weekend came out, especially with the song Holiday on Contra, we were actively trying to start the fourth wave of ska. It's debatable whether we did. I mean, actually, no, we did. There was no wave. But we made,
yeah, I don't think it's debatable.
We made a ska song and, you know, it did all right. Welcome to Vampire Campfire. I'm Ezra.
I'm Bayo.
I'm CT.
We're hanging out here in the back of our clubhouse, outdoors, like we usually do, sitting by the fire.
Making plans.
Can you believe that this is what people have been doing for millions of years?
Something beautiful about it.
Just sitting by the fire, recording a podcast. And yeah, this is something we do a lot, and we decided, why not roll some cameras, record some audio for a podcast? This is a special time for Vampire Weekend, as we're about to have 5 albums in stores with the release of Only God Was Above Us on April 5th. So if you want to pre-order the album now, which you should, go to vampireweekend.com or any website that sells vinyl.
Just search. New album.
It's a beautiful record. The album has been announced now. You probably know that if you're listening. Who knows? Maybe somebody saw Vampire Weekend podcast or stumbled across this. And here you are. Well, oh, yeah, we're a band, by the way.
Oh, that's yeah, important. I forgot about that. Yeah.
If you're really new to this. We announced the album. We dropped 2 songs, Capricorn and Gen X.
Cops.
Gen X Cops, right. We call Gen X Cops Gen X. We call the album Ogwau.
Right.
Mm-hmm. O-G-W-A-U. And by the way, if you hear any noises here and there, we are sitting in front of a real fire. We're kind of near a rooster, and it's raining. They're all pretty pleasant sounds.
Beautiful.
If you catch a little bit of them, hopefully they're relaxing. We're in a kind of interesting zone now because I find that it's a lot easier to talk about our albums when we're reflecting. You know, like mm-hmm. when they've come out, time has passed. You already kind of saw how people reacted to it. You know what people think. You know the impressions, the wrong impression, whatever. You just have more information. We're in this weird zone now where we announce the album. I think the art tells a story. I think the video tells a story. Of course, I think the songs tell a story. But, you know, this is the modern world. You got to create content. You got to do press. And I found that in the past, people start asking you like your influences or what the album's about. You could say one thing.
We could say something impressionistic and that ends up setting a narrative or a tone that maybe is more serious than one might have intended.
Exactly. And also, you know, when you look backwards at classic albums, the artist can't be going out just talking about them in those terms, saying, I really wanted to like tackle this, you know, I wanted to explore what it means to be a human in 2024. All this stuff sounds terrible.
It sounds cool in retrospect.
Maybe it sounds cool in retrospect. Sounds cool if somebody else says it. I felt like in the past, when I've talked about influences, I just noticed that they get repeated over and over again. I always think with Father of the Bride, way before the album came out, an interview was set up. I remember I was walking to the gym.
Well, yeah, was your mind half in the gym at that point?
I think so.
Yeah.
On the way to the gym, you're thinking about the gym.
So when they asked me what I was like, influences, I said... So, and I remember I'd just seen a Casey Musgraves concert. Someone was like, asking me, like, yeah, what are some influences? And I was talking about country music. And I said, I just saw Casey Musgraves. It was a great show. It was just one of those things that then I felt like people kept repeating, influenced by Casey Musgraves. And I just kind of felt like, I don't know. I mean, she's cool, so who cares? Just remember having that feeling of like, right, you say something and then it gets repeated over and over again. Also, on this album, we already got a little taste of the kind of misdirect with the influences.
Right, well, because in the newsletter, which is part of our vinyl live series, we talked about what we've been up to and sort of we're presenting loosely life the idea updates. As we were finishing the record.
Yeah. Yes.
Of life since Father of the Bride.
Which maybe is good for the podcast if we just do, if people haven't seen the newsletter.
Right.
Just the quick, Bear, what was your wrap up of the last 5 years?
My wrap up was that I did jury duty with a famous actor's husband. That's already like a year and a half ago now.
Major.
It would be kind of interesting to make a concept album about serving jury duty in Los Angeles. I'm going to tug that away. But I also talked about a record that I've been finishing up with this project of mine called CYM. Those are my main two updates, I guess. That was
which
in the first
just got mastered and it sounds great.
It got mastered. Yeah, very excited to share
it
with you.
I know there's some Taper's Choice.
Taper's Choice, which is the jam band that's taking Southern California by storm. And pretty, you know, just generalized stuff, getting sober, having two kids, you know, nothing big.
Major.
Nothing big.
And then mine that turned into a bit of this, like, influence repetition thing, which, again, I'm not judging anybody. That's how it works in the mimetic world. I talked about meeting Terry Riley, the legendary composer, and taking a raga singing lesson with him. And that's basically just because I was living in Japan with my family. My wife was working there. A lot of time on my hands. One of my friends said, you know who lives in Japan, in rural Japan? I said, who? He said, Terry Riley, legendary composer. I've always been a big fan. Anybody who doesn't know, even like before Philip Glass and stuff, he was doing minimalist composition, NC, live at Carnegie Hall, amazing. A little bit later, Rainbow and Curved Air, the synth stuff, very influential. And at some point, I think in the 70s, he became an acolyte of a Indian guru, specifically who was teaching music. He learned through this kind of this oral tradition of how you teach somebody by singing and they repeat after you. And anyway, I met him. He was a cool guy, really beautiful human being. He was so sweet the first time we kind of talked. He said, you know, we played the same festival in Knoxville, Tennessee.
It's got to be Big Ears.
Got to be Big Ears.
2010?
Did a raga singing lesson with him, went out to his apartment, rural Japan. He sings, you sing, very beautiful music, just great being around him. So anyway, I wanted to share that with in our newsletter just as like something interesting that I'd done. Is it an influence on this album? It couldn't be. Our albums take too long.
And I got a question. What would you say the influences are on this album?
Well, I've been thinking about it, and I prepared a statement.
And you already went to the gym today.
And I already went to the gym.
Yeah, clear head.
I pumped iron. Actually, today I listened to the Brothers Johnson in the gym. But normally, the truth is, I play Black Sabbath in the gym. What do you guys play in the gym?
My favorite workout band, ultimately, would be Underworld, the great techno act.
Right. If you're doing cardio, you listen to dance music, and you're pumping iron.
It's pretty good for pumping iron, too.
Pumping iron, too? All right.
Yeah.
Two type of guys in this world.
Yeah.
Dance music and metal dudes in the gym.
Well, here's
Which are you?
And here's the third type.
Yeah.
You guys tend to be largely similar in your interests. And I like you guys, I historically and very famously prefer Road Rules over the Real World.
That's right.
Or hard tacos over soft tacos. You know, this is
they're personality types.
That's a major thing. Anybody grew up in the 90s, you either prefer Real World or Road Rules. The vast majority of people I've met in my life prefer Real World.
Oh, yeah.
I just think you get to know the characters a little more. But
there's CT's, no, like, tasks. There's
right.
No,
like, yeah. Exactly. So you're task-oriented. So you prefer Road Rules, which I think is a big deal. And then to prefer hard-shell tacos over soft-shell tacos, I don't even think they make hard-shell tacos anymore.
I mean, they exist.
Yeah.
Usually maybe within the confines of like a double-decker with the, you know, right. Adhesive guacamole
yeah.
in the middle.
No,
sort
but
of
I respect it. It's very unusual choices, and it's part of makes you a unique person.
So
but
to that end.
Go on. Yeah.
I listen to audiobooks.
Nice.
In the gym?
I just need to turn off like the front of my brain and get into the, you know, whatever I'm accessing in whatever move I am or am not doing.
So anyway, back to the influences of Agwow. I tried to put together something kind of impressionistic because it's weird. It's like we're not trying to be all mysterious or something, but you also get a little tight-lipped at times when you're rolling out an album. You don't want to say the wrong thing. You don't want to
color someone's experience of it.
Yeah, because I think some of our fans, I think we have some fans that don't even listen to the singles because they want to take it in as an album.
Totally.
And I remember back in the day we posted the Father the Bride album art and was kind of like opening it and showing it. And there were some people who were like, whoa, no spoilers. Anyway, this is what I put together. A little poem of influences. 20th century New York City, mistaken memories of medieval Manhattan, when the Beastie Boys lived in LA, pre-punk, proto-punk, K-punk, not really A-punk, Junk, Big Muff, Hoboken, Nutley, Yonkers, Kos Kob, the Five Towns, the Five Families, the Five Love Languages, Sisters of Mercy, Brother Lawrence, Book of Hours, Russian Icons, San Mandala's Natarajas, Hexign Barnes, Ondo Churches, Whirling Dervishes, Psychedelic Gershwin, Wire, Plain Jane Indy, David Axelrod, Steven Siegel, New Wave Hot Dogs, Old World Elegance, The RZA, The GZA, Old Dirty Bastard, Inspected Deck, Raekwon the Chef, You God, Ghostface Killa, and M-E-T-H-O-D, Man, Ball Hogs, Sand Hogs, and the greatest non-defense construction project in the history of Western civilization.
Once again, that's Only God Was Above
that's
Us.
Only God Was Above
Available
Us.
Available for pre-order now.
Coming soon. If you like what you heard there.
I love that.
Wait till you hear the music.
And that feels, in a nice way, there were no spoilers in there. Well, there's a couple of hints.
And, there were some morsels in there.
There were some Easter eggs.
Yeah, Easter eggs.
There's some Easter eggs.
Do you want to talk at all about the two songs? Because that's something, they're out.
Right, the two songs are out.
In a way that we can discuss them more openly.
This is a tough one to pick the singles on.
We had long talks over camp.
We actually did. We had a campfire, a vampire campfire discussion about the singles. 10 songs. It's all killer. No filler. Something about these two felt like a good blend. I think we all ended up on the same page. We like that Capricorn is one of the best Vampire Weekend songs ever. And it felt cool to lead with it, even though it's kind of like slow. But it's still like big and it's got like a heaviness.
Exciting, so, absolutely.
You know, like some people called it a ballad. I don't exactly think of it as a ballad.
It's a slower tempo.
Yeah.
And there are some softer parts. But right. I think taken as a whole, it doesn't feel like a ballad.
Yeah. It's a head nod tempo, not really a ballad. And then Gen X is fast and pumped up. And you know what I realized recently is one of the only like minor key singles we've ever had. We have very few minor key songs, period. I think Hudson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gen X.
First minor key single?
I think so.
In the OOF?
I think so. Yeah.
If that's incorrect, Bea will know.
No, yeah. That's
sounds right? Okay. Yeah.
And that one's interesting because, you know, CT, you and I started that song
a long time ago.
Decade ago. To me, 5 years between records feels good and appropriate. I don't know how people do a record once a year, every 2 years.
I mean, to be fair,
yeah,
we had a stretch where we did that.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, right.
We had to. We had to make it while the sun shone. No, I get that. And also, you know, like when you're in your 20s, it makes
sense.
It's a different game.
When people out here just doing like, got that crazy pace in their 30s. I guess not everybody like tours the way we do. Like when we tour, we tour.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when we don't tour, we really don't tour. And then you could just like hang out and live normal life and all that stuff. But anyway, yeah, sometimes it just takes a long time to kind of see what a song can be. But we made that earliest demo in your apartment back in Brooklyn.
2012?
Yeah. Could have been.
Yeah, that was 2012.
Yeah. And what did you play on the earliest demo, the slide thing on?
There was a, I don't know if it's still around, there was a shop called Southside Guitars, I believe, where I would always kind of window shop. It was like South Williamsburg. And it was just this, it was this combo lap steel and like little amp.
Yeah.
And classic me, like in a deal, it's, oh, cool, I'm getting two things for one. I'm not just paying for the instrument, I'm getting a little amp as well
Frugal.
That I can use for other instruments. So I think I bought that somewhere in the months previous, I didn't have it for that long. Like most instruments, I have to say, including drums, I didn't really dig in.
Yeah.
And I just kind of like trusted and hoped for some sort of natural savanti aptitude.
Yeah.
And I believe that part in particular was written on one string, so I didn't have to do any of the difficult
jumping,
switching something like that. But it was like a little lap steel, probably 50s. It's in the studio that Chris and I share now. So it's still around. They can bring that maybe a future campfire, bring it here.
I like that in the final recording, and it being kind of like distorted and stuff. Sometimes I play that for people and they just don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
That sound was trending on my wife's family's text thread.
Really?
Yeah, on the day that the tracks were coming out.
What is that sound?
It sounds so cool. What is that?
Okay.
It
sounds a little like a synth or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I always knew that was a cool demo. It didn't have the chorus that I wanted to go with the A section, so that's why it took a long time.
When it didn't really fit, it didn't seem to fit in the Modern Vampire zone, and even less so, I would say, in the Father of the Bride zone.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said it in multiple ways over the years, that if there's a cool thing, whether it's a demo or an idea, like it sticks around.
Right.
And it'll like maybe the right time presents itself and it's there.
Yeah, every dog has his day. When the band started, nobody was like a master of their particular instrument. But so I've always said that from the jump, Vampire Weekend, it has to have like an amateurish quality. Or whatever. There's something about where the amateur meets the ambitious.
It's like handmade, personal.
Yeah, that kind of handmade thing. And I think that's something we've always held on to. And there is something nice about... What is that? There's something somebody says, right? Beginner's mind. That's a phrase, right?
Beginner's mind.
I don't know. Yeah. Something about creativity.
Well, is that like Lennon like writing on piano? John Lennon of
John
the Beatles?
Lennon, not Vladimir.
But something like at a certain point,
breaking
writing on
out
guitar.
Of the instrument, he, you know.
His hand knew the shapes, and he didn't feel like it was creative in a beginner's mind kind of way, that the piano recaptured that for some amount of time.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I think about, there's a riff I wrote essentially in middle school that I've put on mood boards for like every album since Contra.
You ever play it with you?
I think so.
Oh,
you'll remember.
I know exactly which one you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. And I know exactly what
I took some heart because I read that that Radiohead
Tom
song.
Tom York, National Anthem.
The legendary
he wrote that
childhood riff. Yeah.
Everybody needs a childhood riff. And this one, I've gone over the years between thinking it was cool, thinking it was uncool. I made different demos of it. I've tried it with different people. But again, I think one day it'll work out and then we'll probably be sitting here on the campfire recording a podcast and
20 years.
In 20 years, yeah. And I'll say, you know how old this riff is? This is one of the oldest riffs.
45-year-old riff?
Yeah, the 45-year-old riff. That'd be a good name for an album, the 40-year-old riff. I actually have written this down before. I always thought a funny name for an album. Although this would totally be like when we're kind of like on some like who gives a shit, old dude. Like weird sense of humor is an album called The 40-Year-Old Email. I just always thought that was funny. But everything about it is like so, it was so random. Just like, was that a reference to The 40-Year-Old Virgin? Yes, but it's called The 40-Year-Old Email. Because I always thought that was funny just to picture a 40-year-old email, which there probably are some.
There must be now, by now.
When did the internet get started? Should we talk about the tour?
We are going on tour. After the new album, Only God Was Above Us, comes out on April 5th, we have some one-off shows, but then a big tour coming up.
The first show is on April 8th.
Which is a special day.
But mostly special because there's a total eclipse in Austin, and we'll be playing a show during it.
That's also a very special day because it's your 40th birthday.
That's true.
Will you be doing 40 shots after the show?
After the show. But again, I don't...
It's not about that. That's not what this...
The show's all about the music.
That's
and then,
true.
Of course, the cosmic event, the eclipse. But then, I think later that night, we'll all be there. We have, you know, friends and family in town. I've never done 40 shots. And I'd like to try. I'll make sure I get a gut full of cornbread and barbecue. Some newspaper with a big fat piece of Wonder Bread. Some ribs. Some baked beans. To prepare.
Absolutely.
And then I'm going to do 40 shots. So that'll be a very special show. Yeah. Our first time back on stage since Pentaport Festival in Korea?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. 21 months-ish?
No, but I love that. Ended headlining what was far and away our greatest show in Korea ever.
Oh, easily. That
big
show
time. Big time, big time.
Ripped. It was so cool.
I think it's worth telling the
story. Oh, there is a notorious story from 2013.
Which we call the Burt Wonderstone.
The Burt Wonderstone, you know, the first summer after Modern Vampires of the City came out, we played Hannah Hunt Before Walcott as our penultimate song, which beautiful song, important song, was a new song at the time, and also one that CT would have his eyes closed while he would drum.
Help you stay in the moment.
I would have to look at the set list and see what we played before that. Maybe we played A Punk or something. Crowd's going wild. We click into Hannah Hunt.
Quiet.
Your eyes are closed. There's maybe 10,000 people in the crowd. We get to the end of a song successfully completed. CT, you open your eyes, and what do you see?
I see most of the crowd has vanished.
The crowd has vanished.
We disappeared thousands of people over the course of 4.5 minutes.
And I imagine everybody knows, everybody's seen the film, The Incredible Wonderstone. But if you haven't, that was a comedy about magicians. You know how in The Prestige, the whole movie is about them trying to do this trick, the disappearing man, and just figuring, how do they do that? In Burt Wonderstone, the obsession in the movie is, how do you make the crowd disappear? Because the whole joke is, any magician can make themselves disappear. Seen that a million times.
Oh, yeah.
But a true magician can make the crowd disappear.
So that's to play Hannah Hunt.
Yeah, and so we found out, CT found out that's how you do this, play Hannah Hunt. But I like that. And in Penniport Festival in Korea, come back, Total Eclipse in Austin. That's not like the tour per se.
Yeah. We're not getting on a bus for a minute, but we have some shows.
I wonder, maybe we should talk about how we have a new band and stuff, and we're in this in-between period, and we're getting ready to tour and all that stuff. And, you know, really what a lot of the work is that's happening right now is we're getting together every day with the new band and playing all the time and coming up with all these new ideas and stuff like that.
It's hard to top the Father of the Bride tour. Loved everybody we played with. But our boy Brian, he's out with Paramore right now. I believe they'll be crushing it with Taylor Swift all year. They're putting in the work in on the Eras tour. Greta, people who like follow her on social media, knows that she's been on a journey. She's in great spirits, but you know, she's been on a journey with her voice and
written
and
a book. I can't wait to read her book.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, you know, obviously that's on the one hand the crazy thing for any singer to go through is losing control of your voice due to health issues, whatever. She's dealing with all that, but she's in a great place. But we found two new people, Colin and Ray, who at first we were just like, well, I guess we need some people to cover guitar and keys.
And we should also say Will and Garrett, who are with us last time, will be with us again this time.
Garrett, auxiliary percussion, Will Canzoneri, keyboard shredder. But then we found two people, Colin and Ray, who not only play keyboard and guitar, but this insane bonus is that Colin is a masterful saxophonist and Ray's a masterful violinist and plays pedal steel. And so we've just been having a ball, not only working on the new material, but going back to the old material.
Yeah.
And I could give a little taste. I queued up a little taste for the people. I mean, this is just, we record our practices, you know, so that we can listen back. Like, this is what we've been working on for Sunflower. So far, familiar. This feels right. Love the sound. We always knew that this would be a song we'd probably do a million different versions of.
You can hear the violin very prominently.
There's sax in there too, yeah. Oh yeah.
Just ripping solos.
Okay, so the album is the least reggae, but you know, maybe in the live show, it's still the most reggae.
Yeah, now
it's still part of it.
We're gonna go out on this tour. We're gonna nail the Agwow material. Here's a little sax. Okay, you get the idea. But yeah, you know, it's important for us that the show kind of like showcases the new album, but we got to have our mix it up too. And so yeah, the live band is killer. And one thing we should also tell people is that, as probably some of you have seen, our openers on this tour, a gorgeous patchwork of many different artists that mean something to us. You know, sometimes people put together a package tour and just go out and do it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. We just kind of felt, especially for some of the artists we wanted, we could probably only get them for certain legs.
Yeah.
And we've kind of started something last time that we, at least in New York and LA, we put together special bills and we wanted to kind of bring that energy more to the whole country. So the first leg starting in Houston is with La Loam, Los Angeles League of Musicians.
Yeah, I actually just saw them play here at the Wiltern opening for Corey Wong a couple days ago.
Oh, sick.
It's like of a time, but they do it really well, and it just feels really natural, and it's very easy to get into. Like,
yeah.
I had never heard a single note, and then halfway through the first song, you sort of like, you get it, and you want to move.
It's a great vibe. I love the guitarist.
Yeah.
There's something about the way he dances around the neck. It just really speaks to me.
Then we will be playing the Hollywood Bowl for the fourth time June 12th.
This is our fourth time at the Hollywood Bowl. We thought about switching it up. Los Angeles, second biggest city in America, lots of great venues. Hollywood Bowl just feels right. Such a unique place. And so for that one, we want to do a special bill. We decided to go with a genre that's very influential to Vampire Weekend.
Something we all share.
Something we
absolutely,
all share,
absolutely.
Which is love of ska. And
all the waves.
All the waves of ska. You know, when Vampire Weekend came out, especially with the song Holiday on Contra, we were actively trying to start the fourth wave of ska. It's debatable whether we did. I mean, actually, no, we did. There was no waves. But
I don't think it's debatable.
We made a ska song and, you know, it did all right, but we didn't start the wave. And, you know,
I mean, even A-Punk.
Yeah, A-Punk has a touch of ska. Like,
yeah,
people,
absolutely.
And of course, ska, maybe it's past waves. It's just an ocean now. It's just an ocean of great music. And so for this bill, it was especially fun because we put together Voodoo Glow Skulls. Did we all listen to Voodoo Glow Skulls growing
absolutely.
Up?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love Voodoo Glow Skulls. I had a Voodoo Glow Skulls t-shirt. I was obsessed with their cover of Here Comes the Sun. And so Voodoo Glow Skulls, you know, like they came into prominence in the 90s. For anybody who doesn't know, so they'd be considered a third wave ska punk. And I love like the energy and just like legendary band. So they'll be on the bill. And then we went back a little bit further to the second wave of ska with the English Beat. And Dave Wakeling is just like such a legend, such a huge influence on Vampire Weekend. So Voodoo Glow Skulls, English Beat,
the Dubs.
Vampire Weekend, and the Dubs.
Beautiful.
Three different waves of ska. Honestly, we're not pulling our weight because we failed to actually be part of a wave of ska. But
well, we got to do ska versions of some of our songs.
Yes. So we've been talking about it, like
Scottaman, Skana Hunt.
We got to bring some of that.
Yeah.
We were messing around a little bit with a kind of, and also I think it's not gonna. If you don't like ska, I don't know what your fucking problem is, but don't worry. We're not going to do an all-ska show, but we'll have to have a moment.
We've been talking about it. We might not do. We might end up not doing it.
And also, maybe, we don't have to do all-ska punk either, because like we could do like a very tasteful kind of like
absolutely.
Slow rock steady version of
Hannah Hunt. That would be great.
Something like that.
Beautiful.
So that'll be a very special show, very special bill. Excited about that one. And then, all right, what's it?
Then we go big weekend, Father's Day weekend, and an important weekend in the history of the band, obviously. But we're going to be doing Saturday night and Sunday afternoon at the Greek Theater in Berkeley.
Legendary venue. And that's when we begin the next leg of the tour with an opener that CT helped.
A hero of mine.
Put together.
Mike Gordon, best known as the bassist from Fish, but did some albums with Leo Kaki and, you know, obviously, as a longtime, very public-facing Fish fan, it's amazing to get to share the stage with him and play with him. And
from starting in Berkeley, then going to
outside Vancouver, Burnaby, BC,
Burnaby.
Canada, Deer Lake Park Festival, and we had a great show there
I love
in 2019.
That I love that show in 2019.
Great to go back.
Yeah.
Very excited about playing Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle. That'll be on June 20th. And then we're finishing up with another Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, twofer in Bonner, Montana, outside of Missoula, Montana. A very important town to our band.
Yeah, people don't understand that.
We put in the work in Montana.
People think Vampire Weekend were jet-setting between New York and L.A. Early days, we had a real connection with Missoula, Montana. Is it fair to say it was mostly because of my friend Timmy Donahue?
Entirely because of your friend. Yeah.
I knew a guy from New Jersey. I grew up with both friends of mine, Donahue brothers. Tim Donahue left Jersey, and he ended up going to college at Missoula. And he was a little bit involved with the radio station. So early days, we're hitting the road. Where can we play? Emailing people, whatever. And he hooked us up with our first show at, I don't even know where the first
show was. The Badlander?
Yes.
The Badlander. And I remember we were walking around, and Tim showed us, that right there is the Wilma Theater. That's where the big dogs play when they come to Missoula. And we had our eyes on that. We said, we're going to come back and we're going to play the Wilma one day, which we did very quickly.
2010. That was 2010.
That was great.
And those shows are an evening with.
Right. So that's another thing, is that we're coming up with fun ideas and we don't have an opener.
Yes.
Not because we couldn't find one, but because we wanted to try something special and something fun for those two shows. And maybe it's a couple sets.
We'll see what the atmosphere is like with no opener. Probably play a bit longer, try something different. I also feel like it seems so beautiful out there. I think we'll have a few people wanting to come through. Just so people know, the other openers, we have Rara Riot, who, if anybody doesn't know, they're a band that came out around the same time as Vampire Weekend. We're down at Columbia. They're up at Syracuse, which is also why many of our early shows were in Syracuse, because we had a Syracuse connection.
They sponsored our first out-of-city shows.
Yes, and Wes, the singer, is one of my oldest friends. I've known him since I was 4 years old. Great band. Very excited that they're going to be back on the road.
Kingfish in Colorado.
Oh, we got Kingfish in Colorado. Too. Now, anybody doesn't know, he's a young blues legend, and he opened for us on a bunch of the Father the Bride tour. He's the man. Very excited for that out at Red Rocks. And then a really special one in Chicago is Rara Riot, but also Princess, which is Maya Rudolph's Prince cover band. And I've seen them before, and they slay. She's a diehard Prince fan. She knows the music inside and out.
Can't wait.
That's going to be sick. So those would be really special shows. Then who else we got? We got Colts.
Opened for us 10 years ago.
We go way back with Colts. So that's a lot of the Northeast and stuff. But the a very special bill that we're putting together in our hometown, New York. And this is just one I want to highlight because, I mean, a lot of you already got your tickets. We love playing the Garden so much on Father the Bride. I count that as one of our top three best shows.
It has to be.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and people, it's funny. I'm sure you guys get this too. People say like, oh, you're a musician. You go on tour. What's your favorite venue to play? And I said, it might sound basic. Madison Square Garden, you know, whatever. Bands from New York. It's a very special place. So of course we wanted to go back, but we want to do something different. So this time we're playing Saturday night and Sunday day. And as if that wasn't enough, because New York is so special to us, we have made a climate pledge. We've made a regular pledge, maybe not a climate pledge, that we're doing no repeats. So that means two entirely different sets, except A-Punk, Saturday night, Sunday. All the shows are going to be great, but like, you know, we have to do something really special for our hometown. And on top of that, the bill is absolutely bananas.
People are saying unhinged.
People are saying it's one of our most unhinged bills of all time. But I think it's very us. Now, the one musician who towers above all the rest when it comes to the Garden is Billy Joel. And he's a New York legend, king of Long Island. Absolutely. I'm a huge fan. Always loved him. I mean, and anybody who grew up in the tri-state's got to love Billy Joel, right?
Absolutely.
Growing up with those radio stations, they play deep cut Billy Joel.
Oh, yeah, classic, for sure.
Classic Q104. They're playing album tracks.
Oh, yeah.
We're from BJ country. Now, of course, we would never disrespect the great man by assuming that with his busy schedule that he would have time to stop by our show. You know, he's got new music out.
That's a big ask.
Yeah, definitely. So we love his music. But so, you know, we said, well, there's a lot of people who love his music. And you know who else loves his music? America's greatest Billy Joel cover band, Turnstiles, fronted by Tony Monaco. And everything about it just felt right because we checked out Turnstiles. They got a lot of cool stuff on YouTube. Everything I've seen, these guys bring the house down every
time. They look amazing.
But as if that wasn't enough, because it's New York, we like to have the friends and family vibe. Like last time we played the Garden, it was New York legend Despot did an incredible show with the car dealership's air dancers on stage. Then we had Angelique Kidjo, who's been a friend to Vampire Weekend since the earliest days, legendary singer. So we're psyched to have Turnstiles. We also got some friends to DJ. And Saturday night, in between the music, we're going to have New York legend Mark Ronson DJing. For the Sunday show, we got the brothers Maklovich, Dave and Alan, also known as A-Track and Dave One. And any old school Vampire Weekend fans know that Chromeo has been dear friends of Vampire Weekend.
They probably watched the Woody's performance.
Yeah, they probably saw us play Kids Don't Stand a Chance and have heard their legendary remix of Kids Don't Stand a Chance. So to have those guys in the house will be special. So that's a very special bill for New York only, and it's going to be a very fun weekend.
And I know we're kind of close to wrapping up here, but yeah. I wanted to hard pitch you. And I feel like the answer is no.
Yeah.
But this is the idea I came up with this afternoon.
Yeah, yeah.
My kids were sick, and I was sitting at home, and I was thinking about gags. Yeah. Is it towards the end of the show, maybe like the last song of the Saturday Night Show?
Yeah.
We have crew members bring out. You know, I think twin beds is fine. Maybe a full bed. Maybe a queen if you release
the
space.
This is going.
Everyone gets a bed. We say goodnight. You know, we do our classic rock bow, and then we all go to our beds. We don't leave the stage. House lights go up, but we go to our beds.
Yeah.
The crowd leaves. We sleep on the garden stage.
Maybe play like a lullaby.
Something.
Oh, that's
yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
That's leave. Really nice, yeah.
So people know they kind of quiet down as they're leaving. And then when doors open, the alarm goes off, and we wake up, we stretch.
But one thing that's important to me, we actually sleep there.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah,
it's not a gag, like a visual gag. But
no,
it's,
but we're
it's,
sleeping. Yeah.
We're sleeping at the garden. Everybody goes home, grab a coffee, come back fresh in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and then again, a completely different set.
Except for A-Punk.
Well, so that's an overview of the beginning of the tour. People in the rest of the world, don't worry. We're definitely coming.
You know, it's been pointed out to me that reading the tour poster.
Yeah.
And the name of the new album, which you can pre-order now, is called Only God Was Above Us.
Yes.
But you can, if you want to, read it as Only God Was Above US.
Oh.
So people are waiting. Is there going to be an Only God Was Above UK?
Only God Was Above UK.
Only God Was Above
UK.
EU? Yeah. EU or wherever?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. There will be.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know what we can say or not say. But.
Yeah, that's phase two. So don't worry. We're coming all the places we love to play. 4.5 albums in stores now. Check it out. Only God Was Above Us pre-order. If you wanted to get some tickets. Honestly, some of the shows we talked about are sold out. But whatever. Figure it out. The tour is up. And we'll see you real soon. Thank you.
Bam, you got the fire?
I'll take care of the fire. I'm going to soak it up for
next time.
See you next time.